All right, so Carrie, how did this play come about? How did you end up singing like Frank Sinatra?
So my Sinatra is really that story, and I think that my therapist would probably have his own theories on how Sinatra saved my life, and it's a true story. When I was a kid, I had some unfortunate things happen. When I was 6 or 7 years old, my father died in a car crash with my grandmother. And then my mother remarried. And when I was about 17 years old, my stepfather died. And it doesn't take Sigmund Freud to figure out that I was in bad need of a father. And I think somehow Frank Sinatra came along. He became a father image. He became something that was secure. He became, his sound became something that was very safe to me. And my show, My Sinatra, really is the story of my life. And I sing about 15 of Sinatra's songs that we try to fit into the story of my life. A little bit of his life also. So that's one of the theories of why I started to sing like Sinatra. And then also, it helped that my uncles played for Frank Sinatra in his records.
So you were kind of connected to him in this weird way, even though you didn't know it.
Correct. I was trying to connect to him. And in my bedroom, he became life. He became the only thing that mattered. And at a time that I was very vulnerable, and it was just, this story might have resonance with a lot of other people who maybe have gone through the same thing. For some strange reason, because of my mother being a singer when she was younger, and all my uncles being musicians, I somehow had this talent to sing like Sinatra. It was a very weird thing. And then everyone started to tell me that I sound like him and that I was going to be the next Sinatra. And like that. And then as I grew up, I tried to take advantage of it. Back in the 60s, I went to the Catskill Mountains, which is where a lot of young singers and comics used to go. And ultimately failed because it was the time of the Beatles, and there was no way there was going to be another Frank Sinatra. And so the show My Sinatra tells all about that. It takes you through my life, right from the car accident, right up until now, right up until the current show, me singing.
So can we say in a way that this show, in a way, has been kind of your dream to do something like this?
Oh, yeah. It's the greatest thing in the world because at my age, I never thought that I would ever have a chance to sing his music professionally in a theater and to have it, all be about my obsession and also to make people laugh because it's a kind of a sad story, but we put a spin on it. In the writing, so we try and make it as funny as possible, but at the same time, keeping it real and keeping it about someone's dream coming true.
How long do you think it took you to really write this and to flesh out, something that you felt comfortable showing to someone?
I think 40 years. No, I mean, I've been thinking about it for years. The actual writing, it was a very strange process. I had not sung like Sinatra or sung professionally in 30 years. And about 10 years ago, a friend of mine, Al Tapa, took me to a nightclub. And the nightclub was where they were recreating big band music. And one thing led to another, and I got up to sing with a 25-piece band, and that's where it all started again. And some agent heard me and booked me all around the country doing performing arts centers. And I also got a PBS special, which played all over the country. And so that's how it started. But from the moment it started, I must say that I thought that the story, I wanted to tell the story also. That took more time. The singing was the easy part for me to figure out how to turn it into a dramatic, compelling, poignant, funny story. That started maybe about 5 years ago.
So
I did it first in a nightclub. I forget the name of that nightclub. Jennifer, what's the club that I performed? What? No, after that. The other club, the jazz club. No. I forgot. Anyway, so that's where I developed it for about 8 months in this nightclub, which is no longer. And then I went to L.A., and I worked with a director who helped shape it a little bit more, because there's so many things that you could talk about it, from the father figure to my love for Sinatra and all of this stuff, but probably 5 years.
Okay. So I'm going to give you a hypothetical, Carrie. Let's just say after the production, someone walks over to you that saw the show, and they say exactly what you would like them to say to you after the show. Like, they give you that perfect answer. What do you think that they would say to you about the production? How it made them feel?
Oh, that's a great question. That really is a good question, Patrick. You're good. I like that. A lot of people come over and say amazing things to me because I go outside. I don't do the regular thing that actors do. I don't disappear into my dressing room. I go out front to hear all the people, and there's lots of things. One of the things I think that affects me a lot is some guys come over to me and they say that it's their story, that it's the same as their story, how they want it to be somebody else. It started in their bedroom, and they related to it so much because it was like them. That means a lot to me. That means that I've struck something in people, you know, that everyone, because I think in our culture, a lot of people want to be somebody else. Whether it's Donald Trump or Frank Sinatra, you know, a lot of people have dreams to be somebody else. And there I am on stage talking about that dream. You know?
Absolutely. I know this is a difficult question to ask, but favorite Sinatra song, what do you think it would be?
Well, for a guy like me, it's so difficult. Because most people only know 5 Sinatra songs. My Way, New York, New York, Night and Day. I unfortunately know about 1,000 of them. And there are some unknown ones that are so beautiful, so incredible, that just never received the exposure. But in the songs that everybody knows, I guess that I love One for My Baby. One for My Baby, or I've Got You Under My Skin.
Why is that?
And I have to tell you, Patrick, one of the biggest shocks in the show is that when I first started to do this version of the show, I had a producer show up. He was a Broadway producer. This is 5 years ago. He loved the show, but he said to me, I don't think it could be a success because the Sinatra audience is dying out. And I said to him, you're wrong. I'm on stage every night, and I see the amount of young people in their 30s and their 20s who are coming to see this music. He couldn't believe it. Well, that is one of the most satisfying things about the show. When I look in the audience and I see all these young guys and girls who love Sinatra, they just love the milieu, they love the music, they love the attitude, they love the romance. So that's one of the things that, and there's a sales site called Living Social. Have you ever heard of it?
Yes, yes.
You know that we sold 3,000 tickets on Living Social in 3 days.
Wow.
And it's mostly younger people.
Why do you think that is?
I think that there's very little romance in today's pop music. I think there's very little melody. You know, you have to go back to the Beatles or some great R&B to get melody. A lot of the alternative rock people don't write those sort of melodies. So I think that's one reason. I think people really miss that. And I think when a guy in his 30s and his girlfriend want to go and have a romantic evening, what better way to start by listening to the King of Romance, Frank Sinatra? So that's my... And then also, Sinatra's all around us. He's in every bank. He's in every coffee shop. He's in every taxi cab. So they're bombarded with it. So it's very interesting to look out there and to have all... And then, the most amazing part is for me to have a 15-year-old teenager come over to me after the show and say, wow, I love him. 15 years old. And that's because of the internet.
So is there anything else that you want to say about the production that we haven't touched base on? Like, who do you think would get the most out of this production?
I actually think everybody, young and old, the production right now is a little bit different because in this, we are now at a place called Sophia's, which is in the Edison Hotel on 46th Street, right in the heart of Broadway. And one of the things which we've added, which is amazing, I must say, is projections of my deceased fathers and my mother and my three uncles who played for Sinatra. And the hotel that I worked at in the Catskill Mountains, and Frank Sinatra himself. And it adds an amazing new dimension to the show. Just amazing. Because it's almost like living my life. You know, so I think that's very special. And it's much more like an old-fashioned Copacabana nightclub. The place. So it's really, really nice. I'm living out my dream, talking about my obsession, singing about Sinatra, and singing about my life, and getting laughs. And I'm telling people also some history of Frank Sinatra that they don't know. Most people don't know what happened in November of 1952 when he walked out on stage at the Copacabana and blood spurted out of his mouth because his throat hemorrhaged.
Wow.
Because he was singing too much, smoking, drinking. So they look up and they're also getting this marvelous history of this American pop genius who changed music almost as much as the Beatles and the Stones and Bob Dylan.